Well, last Tuesday, June 6th, was the last day for students in Sarasota Public School for this school season. It is a wonderful day for children. One of my favorite memories of growing up in Phoenix was the last day of public school each June. The teacher would give us our report cards. Mine was never very good, but I didn't care. It was the last day. The bell would ring, and we would be free, free until September. The entire summer stretched before me with no deadlines, no responsibilities. The hot summer air had a special feel and smell, and I associated that with the joyful liberation from the expectations of others. The hot June air in Sarasota, although a little more humid, reminds me of that time in my childhood. Those summers, my favorite place was the public library. I ignored the suggested reading lists the school provided, and instead I wandered through the stacks, picking out books that looked interesting. The Hardy Boys series was about teenage brothers who were also amateur detectives. Then I read the original Sherlock Holmes stories. I finished them in a week. Then I discovered a wonderful book called Half Magic about children my age. And then as I grew older, I discovered a wonderful book called Martian Chronicles about living on Mars. And then I found a book called A Tale of Two Cities, and I fell in love with Charles Dickens' writing. A joy of solitude was sitting alone, reading. At night, I would use a flashlight under the covers to read in the summer solitude. For a time, my family owned a small cabin in the Granite Hills just west of Prescott, Arizona. Now, Prescott is 5,000 feet in elevation and therefore is about 10 or 15 degrees cooler than Phoenix. We would go there on weekends for relief from the summer heat. For me, solitude in Prescott was exploring those granite hills among the ponderosa pines. My older sister and I made up names for the various rock formations. One we called the Impossible Mountain because climbing it was impossible until one solitary day when I did. It was not until I was in seminary studying to be a minister that I read Walden. Thoreau wrote, "I love to be alone." I understood. He was bred to no profession, said Emerson. He never married. He lived alone. He never went to church. He never voted. He refused to pay a tax to the state. He ate no meat. He drank no wine. He never knew the use of tobacco. And though a naturalist, he used neither trap nor gun. When asked at dinner which dish he preferred, he answered, "The nearest." Born 200 years ago this summer, Thoreau published Walden in 1854. In the book, he wrote that he did not like the noise of machines. He complained, The Fitchburg Railroad touches the pond about 100 rods south of where I dwell. I hear the iron horse make the hills echo with his snort like thunder, shaking the earth with his feet and breathing fire and smoke from his nostrils. Well, Thoreau died in 1862 at the age of 44. Over 150 years have passed, and the world has become a little noisier. The Model T went on sale in 1908. In 1914, the St. Petersburg-Tampa airline boat became the world's first scheduled passenger air service, operating between St. Pete and Tampa. Quick flight from one town to the other. The first commercial airline. Commercial radio started broadcasting in 1920. So today, the quiet solitude that Thoreau found at Walden Pond is harder to find. Most recently, we have invented the cell phone, which we used earlier in the service. In our hyper-connected society, it's hard not to check for messages at all times. A 2013 study, now this was conducted in England, so this may not apply to Americans. A 2013 study says that 62% of women admit interrupting a sexual encounter to check their cell phones. Now, to the credit of the men, only 48% of the men admitted to doing the same. 34% of the people who admitted to checking their phones during sex claimed that their partner, quote, did not mind, end quote. Henry David Thoreau would be amazed. Sound surrounds us. Cell phones, texting, email, Facebook, and tweets. Traffic, television, radios, jet engines, and jackhammers. When was the last time you did not answer a phone or turn on a computer or a television for 24 hours? In my own life, it's a rare event. However, in some ways, I have not changed much from when I was a child. In summer, I still look forward to the joy of solitude. In Florida, I think of Anne Morrill Lindbergh. While on vacation in the early 1950s, she stayed alone in a seaside cabin about 100 miles south of us. Her book, Gift from the Sea, is a sort of 20th century Walden, a story of solitude from the perspective of a woman. She wrote, "The beach is not the place to work. I should have remembered that from other years. Too warm, too damp, too soft for any real mental discipline or sharp flights of spirit. One never learns. Hopefully, one carries down the faded straw bag, lumpy with books, clean paper, long overdue unanswered letters, freshly sharpened pencils, lists, and good intentions. The books remain unread, the pencils break their points, and the pads rest smooth and unblemished as the cloudless sky. No reading, no waiting, no thoughts even, at least at first. She described the need for a temporary place to recover from the world. Now, I'm a social being, and I enjoy the support and the companionship of others. However, like Thoreau and like Anne Moore Lindbergh, I also enjoy peace and quiet. I need both community and solitude. But my impression is that for many of us, solitude is neglected in favor of continuous contact. Solitude is often considered something to avoid, a punishment, a realm for losers. The pressure is to stay in contact. So in 1995, my colleagues told me that if I wanted to continue to serve as an effective minister, I must get an email account. In 2008, they came to me again and told me that if I wanted to continue to serve as an effective minister, I must get a Facebook account. Then when I decided to move from my position in Bethesda, Maryland to another church and started to apply, a trusted colleague said to me, "Roger, if you want to get another position, you must have a cell phone." Today, I don't yet have a smartphone or a Twitter account or a blog, but some people have suggested that if I do not always keep up with the world of constant communication, that I am strange, that I am abnormal. So I confess that occasionally I engage in a terrible heresy. I turn off my phone. 2 days may go by when I don't check my email. A week or more may pass when I do not look at Facebook. Sometimes I take a break and I don't pay any attention to the clutter and the nonsense of the world. On a hot June day in Florida, when I really, really want to be alone, I might go to the Selby Library in downtown Sarasota. On the second floor is a west-facing room that others seldom visit. It's well-lit and air-conditioned, a nice view from the windows, and a sign on the door says, "No phones, no computers allowed." In this quiet space, it is only appropriate to bring a book made of paper. It is one of my solitary retreats in this community. On cool days in the winter months, a favorite retreat of mine is Myokka State Park. The trails in the park allow me to walk for a time alone, with little noise from machines or other people. Nature flows around me, and I feel the glory, the majesty, the immensity of life. Now, I admit, on rare occasions, this solitude loses its joy, and a feeling of loneliness will take over. However, most of the time, when I am alone out of free choice, when I choose to be alone, I feel comfortable and happy. I enjoy the silence. A few years ago, One summer I flew to Phoenix to visit my father when he was still alive. At the airport, I rented a car and I drove north towards Prescott, where he lived. I made a detour to stop at a place called Montezuma Castle National Monument. Since it was July and the temperature was 116 degrees, I had the monument to myself. When I stepped out of the car, the silence engulfed me. No sounds of cars. No airplanes flying over me. No sounds of insects in that heat. No sounds of wind. The air was still. Silence. It was a stunning experience. I was suddenly aware of how noise just always surrounds me. I felt a calmness, a sense of oneness, and the joy of solitude. The absolute silence was a peak experience. Though I recommend, if you want to try this, applying a good sunblock cream and putting a gallon of drinking water in your car. Lest I overemphasize silence, I should pay tribute to the pleasure of sound. That day in Arizona, a bird flew over, and in the silence, it was so quiet that I could hear the sound of the flapping of the bird's wings in the air. Later, when I returned to civilization, music sounded sweeter because I could contrast it with the memory of silence. In solitude, I nurtured myself. Each day as I work here at the church, or I go and purchase groceries at the store, or sit in a restaurant, or drive my car, I am asking myself, well, what do people think of me? I hope they have a positive opinion. If they do not, I might try to adjust my behavior by telling a funny story to entertain them or by purchasing new clothes. I'm trying to fit in. But when I remove myself from everyday society, I don't focus on what others might be thinking about me. For a time, free of the awareness of the presence of others, I get in touch with my feelings and my thoughts based on my own experiences and my own reason. This self-differentiation allows me to appreciate myself as a creature separate from other people. In a quiet place, away from the expectations and the interruptions, I reflect on what it means to be myself. In the words of Virginia Woolf, get a room with a lock on the door where you have the freedom to think of things in themselves. Well, I recommend it. Now, it may take a little bit of work before such solitude turns into a pleasant experience. Still, once it does, it may become the most important relationship you ever have, the relationship you have with yourself. In solitude, I daydream. Some of the best ideas have come from daydreaming. Because of a plague in 1666, Isaac Newton had to leave Cambridge for the isolation of his family's farmhouse. At the farm, Newton saw the falling apples and wondered why they always fell straight down, and eventually imagined the laws of gravity. In Zurich 100 years ago, Albert Einstein found that his daydreaming led to his imagining the theory of relativity. In Edinburgh in the 1960s, Peter Higgs did his groundbreaking work in physics in an environment of peace and solitude. Creative people spend time daydreaming. Instead of seeking friends or organizations, their intimate companion is solitude. Solitude is also important in religion. Moses retreated to Mount Sinai. Jesus spent 40 days in the wilderness. Muhammad climbed to a cave on a mountain. The Buddha meditated under a tree. The great religions are the reflection of their interior lives, of their leaders. If their visions were slightly different from one person to another, the process itself was the same. Get away, be alone, search inside, touch a higher realm, enter into the divine, listen to the still small voice, and let your spirit soar. So most of us, I think, need both solitude and community. After 2 years, 2 months, and 2 days at Walden Pond, Thoreau left his cabin to live again in town, where he spoke against slavery. He opposed a popular war, and he went to jail for refusing to pay his taxes. On the other hand, there was that private Thoreau, the explorer in the forests and rivers of New England, the friend of squirrels and birds, the observer of fish and turtles, the dreamer who could see the world in a ripple of the pond, the poet of the interior life. On the other hand, there was the public Thoreau, the bold character of the community, the ardent critic of war and slavery, the jailed advocate of civil disobedience, the political activist whose essay on civil disobedience influenced political revolutions and whose writings on nature helped give birth to the environmental movement. In 1852, Thoreau wrote in his journal, "I wish to begin this summer well, to do something in it worthy of it and of me, to transcend my daily routine and that of my townsmen, to have my immortality now, that it be in the quality of my daily life." So I love the church. I love its rituals, its music, its ceremonies, its festivals, its glorious traditions. They're all significant additions to my life. Yet as Whitehead warned, if you are never solitary, you are never religious. So in about 3 weeks, starting in July, like Thoreau and Anne Moore Lindbergh, I will retreat. Not that solitude is the ultimate goal of my existence, because I am not a hermit, nor am I a social butterfly. I seek a balance between privacy and participation, between solitude and society, between individualism and community, between the inner life and the outer life. They must nurture each other. And after I'm away for a while and I rediscover who I really am, I will return in September with a firm resolve, a vigorous passion, a greater understanding, and a more valid vision of the future. To paraphrase Thoreau at Walden Pond, in July and August, I will greet solitude as a welcome guest. I will preach only to myself. I will live life near the bone where it is the sweetest. I will read books as deliberately as they were written. I will treat myself tenderly like a delicate blossom. I will discern the divine in the present moment. And as Thoreau said, I will ignore every activity that requires new clothes.